welcome back. Time for another episode of Driven by Design. The one show, the only show that shows you the future of automotive design and personal mobility in today's case, with our driven designer who's driving everybody crazy with all his geeking over this board here.
I really am today. This is part deux. Two-part series. I'm really excited. So I want to go ahead and reintroduce yourself for the people who are just joining part two instead of part one.
I'm Don Tashman from Loaded Boards and Unlimited Electric Skateboards.
Yes, and we were so fascinated by his motorized skateboard that we decided to
Geeking over the design. You guys are talking about Charles Ames furniture. You're talking about the future of micromobility. It's a skateboard.
I know, but also, it's a vehicle show, and it's the first time we've had an actual vehicle in the showroom.
Yes.
So we have to present it. But today, in part one, we talked a bit about the actual design of the board. But we also want to debut today our special guest, part two.
Yes.
Wake up!
He's going to be the poster dog for the skateboard. They must have like skateboarding dogs and stuff, don't they? They have everything.
Oh, Lou can surf. He has.
You're kidding me.
Uh-huh, this dog knows how to surf. This is Lou, the design dog. He's making his debut today. He just woke up. He is going to demonstrate the board.
Cowabunga, buddy.
You ready, dude?
All right.
Say hi to your public. Okay. So he just stands there. See? Okay. Now, can he go? We can make it move.
Wouldn't he freak out, though, if the board really started moving?
You know, we should do an outdoor one, but he would ride
Look, he's wagging his tail.
Yeah. So I brought him in today because actually
So I got to stop you both here again. And this is, again, one of those surreal moments. We got a dog on a skateboard in a studio doing this. And I'll tell you what's even stranger. So we've started a series with Staples. Staples is doing in-store talks, and OC Talk Radio is guinea pig here in Orange County. We're going to be doing talks. And immediately the guy says, well, how are we going to get people to come in? He said, well, I should get my dog to come in. I said, what are you talking about? My dog skateboards.
Oh, he does. Yeah.
I mean, he surfs. Yeah, and he skateboards.
So he's not the only one.
And so he's a surfing dog, and he says he has 50,000 followers. Every time we take him out at the beach and put him up there, crowds gather, and he goes up on a surfboard, and people go nuts. What is it about dogs on vehicles?
Well, I think because it's an amazing feat, and dogs have really good balance. One of the things we were talking about is all the different senses it takes to ride a skateboard or do these kind of things, and dogs have that sort of intuition of how to do that.
Like cats or whatever.
Like cats. But
dogs seem to like it, too.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't want to get off the darn thing.
He would probably.
All right, take Lou down here. Otherwise, the whole show would be the Lou show.
Well, he's very good at stealing the spotlight. But listen, so I want you to talk about the board, and I want you to tell a bit about
That's the cheap trick that got everybody to watch here. Okay, all right.
Yeah, well, and I'm a cheap trick. So
how did you design this thing?
Yeah, tell the story about how you, your inspiration. Your personal story is interesting to me, and I think it would be to our audience as well, is that, you know, talk about the impetus for this.
And let's put Lou down, otherwise everybody's staring at the dog and not listening to the show here. Let's put Lou in the back here.
Okay.
You want him on the camera. If he is, everybody's going to look at him and not the us. All right. So
had your moment.
How and why? That's it, buddy.
Tell me the story.
My personal story and how I got into skateboarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure. I grew up skateboarding. Mm-hmm. I grew up here in L.A. My mom actually skateboarded, took her old roller skates.
What?
And put, 2x4, attached them to 2x4 and would skate around the neighborhood. So all my siblings and I grew up with skateboards under our feet.
Yeah.
But every parent's scared to let their kids skateboard. You're going to break something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she skated when you were...
She'll still get on a skateboard.
Oh, really?
Frightening to me, but it's pretty amazing.
Where does she live?
She lives in LA.
She's in LA, so she gets around. She must be so proud of you then.
Yeah, she's a big fan.
She must have been the coolest mom on the block here.
She definitely was and is.
Now, hi, mom. What's her name? We have to give her a shout-out.
Eva.
You made a great son who made a great
board.
But
she was open to you skateboarding when other mothers said, don't you dare.
Totally. Especially in the, in the mid-80s and with the Bones Brigade and all my friends and I skateboarding. A couple of us getting hurt. And
that means broken bones, right?
Exactly. And, most of my friends stopped skateboarding at that point. And I continued until I got a car.
Yeah.
And realized
I have to ask, what was your first car?
It was a Nissan 240 SX.
What? great little
this
car.
Is a circle of strange thing here. You got a Nissan designer and you bought a Nissan.
Yeah, a long time ago, but I had a long time there. But anyway, Nissan, great product. But okay, so go on.
I love
so
that
you,
car.
Yeah, the 200 or 240?
240.
Yeah, that was a neat little Sentra based car. Yeah.
But you know, you bring up something, and then I'll let Brian Lunch into this. Is this a product that is you start riding this because you can't ride anything else? You're a kid.
It's a great point.
Or is it, and then you leave it behind in the closet, like your youth? Or is this something that you carry with you the rest of your life?
I think especially at that point, and skateboarding's also always had these kind of cultural nuances to it as well, and I think that's part of the attachment, because really when all is said and done, it's a plank of wood with the wheels attached to it. But people having these, you know, such strong personal attachments to it, I think comes because of the both the freedom of it and also the just the cultural resonances of skateboarding and skateboarding history.
I mean, it speaks to your childhood. You have fond memories of this, and so.
Or does it speak to
that's
rebel
true with bicycles as well, right? Yeah. So yes. how is skateboarding different? I think skateboarding is the opportunity to do tricks, the opportunity for personal expression on a skateboard. I think is more pronounced.
To help people understand that, why? Because you're more.
It can be much more challenging in terms of tricks, and also just because the way you move your body, the way you're able to ride it, and kind of challenge yourself and push yourself.
So, what does electricity add to that that was missing before? Is it you can go farther? Is it now you can with less effort, or is there something else I'm not seeing that electricity? Why electrify a board?
Well, it definitely on a functional transportation level, it changes. The nature of the board. It makes it much more usable for longer distances. A traditional skateboard, you're probably not going to take more than 1 or 2 miles. An electric, 5-6 miles is
that's a big radius.
That's it.
So that moment when you went from being a kid on a skateboard to a car to back to a skateboard, when did you have that sort of aha, put electricity on this? When did that come? Do you remember that?
That came a lot later. I mean, there's a lot of steps in between that.
Okay.
Maybe to backtrack, for me it was going to college and going to New York for college. Mm-hmm. And to get around New York City, I had fallen in love with snowboarding during high school. I saw it at one of the local mountains and fallen in love with snowboarding and wanted to do snowboard as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And as a way to get around New York City, I started taking old snowboards and putting trucks and wheels on them. And I spent like 5 to 7 years building skateboards as a hobby.
But they were mobile snowboards. They were wheeled snowboards. That's your aha moment.
Yeah.
It came from... Go ahead.
Snowboards from, there were really no longboards at that point.
Right.
No longer boards with bigger wheels. Sector 9 started in the mid-90s. Around then.
What is Sector 9?
They're the godfathers of modern day longboard skateboarding.
Okay. So just really breaking it, this would be considered a longboard.
A longboard.
I mean, it's longer than a regular skateboard.
Interestingly enough, a longboard means anything that's not a traditional double kick 32, 33 inch skateboard. So it could be shorter, it could be longer.
Okay.
It's still considered a longboard.
What's the double kick? That's where you kick, there's like a little flare in the back, you can kick it up or something?
Yeah, where it has a nose and tail, and those are very trick specific.
Yeah.
And ours tend to be more for transportation, for speed, but also for tricks. I mean, depending on the board, we build plenty of boards that are used for modern freestyle and longboard dancing is a huge genre.
Longboard dancing? We're gonna all go out on the plaza here, and we're gonna have a country dance, and we're gonna have skateboards
salsa.
Underneath us.
It's hard to explain. It'd be easier to check out.
I know. This is a show that needs to be outside testing this.
But,
well, so you tell me you take these longboards, you put wheels on them.
Mm-hmm.
This is now you've invented a new kind of skateboard. This is your Eureka.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like. There was a bit of a zeitgeist in New York at that time in the late 90s where there was a few people kind of having some of the same ideas who each went off and built their own longboard companies, including myself, including a guy named Brian from Earthwing. There's another company, Bustin, that also came out of New York City at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about this personal awareness, riding through New York City with the taxis and the potholes and the pedestrians.
Yeah, obstacles and danger.
It's like being in Frogger. Like,
I was thinking the same thing. It's like a video game, especially that era of New York.
Especially
it was grungy.
That era of New York. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of the aesthetic came out of that.
Was it a scene? Was
no,
it a happening?
No, it was a handful of us, yeah. Actually, at that point. It became a scene later on in the early 2000s. Uh-huh. I personally ended up working for a .com in the late 90s, got out in 2000 right as the market crashed, and just right place, right time, got lucky.
And intuition. I would say it's better to be dumb and lucky than the other way around.
And what did you do in the .com? Were you a salesman, a designer?
I did a bunch of things. So I started off in sales, and then I went into marketing, and then I went into financial analysis, and I ended up just meeting some really great people. There's still a lot of good friends.
So they're serious, because I picture the people building skateboards, like the people who build surfboards, as just kids that never grew up.
Well, I think that's a good part of
their
story.
They're just sort of fanboys, you know. But you've got a real business background here.
Yeah, and I think this is the nice, really interesting part of your story, is that I love when we were talking in the lobby about how tell the story about what your dad wanted you to do and how it sort of came full circle into this.
So my dad was a mechanical engineer, mm-hmm. who practiced that for a couple years, but then went into business, mm-hmm. and loved business. And business was a huge part of who he was and how he expressed himself. And he was very adamant that when I went to college that I study business, mm-hmm. and he told me he'd help support me to get through school as long as I studied business.
I'll pay for college as long as you study business.
So,
and were you interested in business?
Not at all.
That's my favorite part of the story. Yeah. So,
nor in engineering. Yeah. Actually, so I ended.
But
up
you did the devil's bargain.
I ended up getting a degree in literature.
Oh, and, why though? Why? Because you went to a school.
I went to Columbia, yeah. So it was enough to make an argument for him that, you know, it's still in his best interest to help support me.
And, yeah, yeah, it's a good school.
He was a wonderful, supportive dad, and really had no intention of getting into business. And he wanted me to go to get an MBA afterwards.
Yeah.
And it really just wouldn't have been appropriate for me.
Right.
I had no way of applying it. And here I am doing business and mechanical engineering. And I love it. And it's really, both of them are my passion.
And the full circle is that you had a skateboarding mother and a dad in business. And what do you do now? Your business is making
business.
I mean, it's in you. You know, it's your passion. Your parents should be pretty happy. Like, that's pretty cool, man.
What kind of literature did you specialize in?
Modernist literature, particularly like Joyce and mm-hmm. very kind of obscure, rarefied.
Oh, yeah. Joyce, what a strange book if you've never read Ulysses. Is it Ulysses? The one night, and it goes on and on, and it's a bizarre book. They're still trying to interpret this and figure it out all these years later what the hell that book means.
It actually ties into some of what you were saying before. So I studied that type of literature, which is very... In my opinion, it's a bit of like rarefied navel gazing. You know, it's these ivory towers.
Yes.
Ivory towers.
Exactly.
Of
I see
literature.
I get the analogy now.
Ivory towers of literature, where it's not. You know, you mentioned that about design. Design has to be accessible.
Yeah.
And I was interested in that because, you know, I was at the time. But today, I'm not interested in that type of literature at all.
Yeah.
I feel that art, design, literature needs to be accessible.
Yeah.
Without being dumbed down, I don't think it should be.
It's not James Joyce as an example, if you've never read. I had a roommate in college who wrote he spent his whole life trying to interpret what that book meant. It has layer upon layer upon layer written into it. And it's one of these obscure, it's sort of like, I'm going to use a tough word, I'm sorry, it's almost like mental masturbation. It's sitting here trying to figure out over and over and over again, what the hell does this mean? And at the end of the day, for what?
Yeah.
So two people can figure it out. It's so completely inaccessible to the regular world.
I think that's a
here.
Good tie into what you were saying about about design and literature. These things being accessible doesn't mean dumbed down. It means actually, it's like good design isn't dumb. Good design is smart because that it serves its need, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a very interesting part of your story to me, is that you sort of went into this world of making mobility accessible, right?
Exactly.
So,
do you ever do? Tom Matano was here, former head of design for Mazda. Another one of these wild guys who wants to get into be the handle. You must. You know, I can't do his accent, but you know, you must be the handle if you're to design it. Feel how that feels to be grabbed by the a car owner and yanked and all this stuff here.
He was my mentor. He was head of Mazda. He's created the Mazda Miata.
Oh wow!
But he believes that if you're going to design a door handle, you have to pretend you're a door handle.
So, are you? Do you ever pretend you're the skateboard and what it's like to be the? Because he's like Mr. Miyagi. He has his Japanese accent. You know,
I've never thought about it from that perspective.
You know what? But hear me out. Because
I feel like I get stepped on a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing that I think is interesting about a skateboard is that the skateboard, a car could technically drive itself now, and very soon will. But a skateboard can't do anything without you. You are the transportation device when you're on a skateboard, right? It's an extension of your body.
Right.
So I think in that sense, as wacky as this kind of sounds,
you are the skateboard.
You are the skateboard. Without
one with the skateboard.
Yes, because without you, the skateboard is incomplete. So, it doesn't do anything.
So I think that's where I particularly see my niche and my future, where my particular interest is. I mean, as we talked about earlier, it's the future of mobility is. It's the Wild West. There's still a lot of changes that need to occur. There's etiquette. There's infrastructure. There's figuring out what the types of vehicles are. And I think there's going to be a whole range of vehicles
over
the next 5-10 years, for sure, that are going to, you know, in terms of speed, in terms of footprint, and in terms of personal engagement also in those vehicles.
Break those down real quickly. Tell me etiquette, because that means don't run into everybody, I guess, and rules of the road.
Etiquette is like if you go into Northern Europe, for example, and you look at like what they call the Dutch method of opening your car door, you know how you reach over from your right side. The Dutch have to learn how to do that. So they look over their shoulder, and that way they don't hit any bikers.
And what do we do in America?
And we use our left hand.
And we just fly it open.
And we just throw the door open. And
fascinating.
Interesting. I never heard
people.
Of that. Okay.
So it's also like culturally, I went to Denmark a couple of years ago just to kind of study how they had set up their infrastructure. And that's where I feel like the infrastructure part, they do some really smart things where the car, right now with bike lanes and alternative vehicle lanes, are generally in the most dangerous part of the street between the parked cars and the driving cars. And it's frightening.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense that etiquette is more important.
Right.
There. So okay. So the etiquette, and then talk about the
etiquette. Like, if, for example, in Denmark, you know, you walk down the street and you see the old ladies are cognizant of the bikes that are going by them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a cultural sensibility of being aware of these types of vehicles. One of the issues that we're having right now with all the shared scooters is people dumping them everywhere. And that type of etiquette needs to be figured out. I don't have
because it becomes a blight, and then the communities fight it.
Yeah. I wonder there's the legislation way to handle it, or maybe there's the design way to handle it. You know, one of the things I noticed about like the bikes, like the one that Wheels has, is that people don't leave them on their side. They put down the kickstand and they leave it up. And I wonder if that's because in our childhood we have that in our mind to put down the kickstand and leave it standing versus toss it aside like a scooter.
Wheels, I believe, actually requires you to take a picture of it standing up in order to shut down.
How interesting.
The app.
Yeah, but I wonder if people also just do it intuitively because that's what we did as kids, is you always put your kickstand down, you know? So it's like there's a design solution there that you maybe in the way these are designed, they want to be put back into a nice place. And so I'm just curious where you think, like, because I see what you have coming from the automotive industry. To me, what this is a platform. Yeah, a platform for multi-vehicles to grow from. Do you see this becoming something like, you know, a vehicle that you could sit on, or like where do you imagine that future of?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing that really excites me is modular vehicles and thinking about how you can create this platform that you can build off of.
Explain what a modular vehicle is to our listeners.
Pie in the sky for me, a modular vehicle would be a vehicle that I can drive in, and then if you and I want to go together, we can just attach our two vehicles together.
Oh, okay,
and
very literal.
And then if we, you know, let's say we need to carry our couch, so we can add a truck bed to it. Or if, you know, we're bringing a couple friends, we can add two back seats.
So it's like Legos. I can fit it together and build a bigger structure here.
I don't know if structurally how feasible this is, but to me, when you look at how each of us drives these large vehicles with these, you know, I don't know, 50, 60, 70-foot footprints on them, and it's one person in that vehicle versus this, which is like a, you know, a 3-square-foot footprint. It just doesn't make sense,
right?
Especially in a city like LA.
That leads to a good question. When you get to your destination with this, what do you do with it?
Well, that's one of the great things. I think that's one of the advantages of electric skateboards over any other electric vehicle that I know of, maybe with the possible exception of those hoverboards. Uh-huh. But it's
we were talking about Back to the Future too. Yeah. That everybody in this generation relates this.
But they're literally making hoverboards now.
Do you remember those hoverboards?
Oh yeah, the actual ones. The hoverboards that don't hover.
That don't hover.
Yeah, exactly. Fair enough. Okay.
These are small enough. I mean, it's not light, but it's about 14, 15 pounds.
And, okay.
You know, it's for an electric vehicle, it's by far the lightest electric vehicle there is out there. So
it's the only vehicle we've actually brought on the show here that we.
It's our first, like I said, it's our vehicle debut.
There you go, and you can take this with you, and you know,
to carry it.
School, you can carry it. You can put it under your desk. You can put it in your locker.
Would you ever have an appliance that allowed me to sling it over my back, like a backpack, something that allowed me to carry it that way? There's an interesting accessory market.
Yeah, some of our competitors have actually built backpacks for them, and I see people using them. And it makes a lot of sense.
I see. This makes me think of the travel industry with this luggage that now is following you through the airport.
Yeah.
You know, now that it's electric, this thing has its ability to move on its own, right? Mm. So could you see that, you know, some place where you get to your destination and this now becomes your shopping cart, or this follows you through, you know, where you no longer
That's
are
cool.
riding.
Yeah.
You know,
it's your personal
like
hand truck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Follows
it becomes
you.
Something.
Stand itself up and follow you like your little friend. That
Yeah, like R2-D2.
Utilitarian.
Yeah.
They're robots at that point.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. We were talking about Segway, the company that makes all the scooters earlier. And they just announced a three-wheeled scooter that is actually self-driving.
You're
drifting away from the mic here. Yeah.
It's a self-driving three-wheeled scooter.
You can bring it to you if you want.
More comfortable. Thank you.
I like to lean back, so I bring it way over.
Yeah, all right.
Three-wheeled electric scooters that I don't know if when they're going to deploy them, but that are self-docking. You know, effectively, you can, like an Uber, you can call it. It'll come to you.
Oh, wow.
And, you know,
here, boy.
In the morning. You know, every morning I know that I leave the house at 7:30 so that Segway shows up in my house at 7:30.
Have you ever done
waiting.
Scooters, Brian? Have you ever done any of the future work?
I did a program for a car company about, you know, these types of what are these things going to be? And so they were mostly sketches. But yeah, but exploring this kind of stuff is fascinating. Like just looking at what can this be beyond the platform, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's a conversation for another day, but it sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aspirations isn't just a child's toy that he grows out of someday. He or she grows
out
of
like getting
sometime.
Back to this. Thanks, Paul. I go ahead, because I really love how the point of this podcast, the thing that I love about it, is it's not just the object. It's about the story of how you got here. Mm. Every person tells the story of how they got here. It's very, you know, inspirational. So people watching this can be like, I have an idea. I want to do it too. So you've taken your childhood passion and evolved it into this. And so maybe, you know, as you kind of get to the end here, and I want to give you some time to let people know how to find you, what would you say has been your biggest inspiration to get here? Like what keeps you up at night? What like makes you, you know, do this if you weren't getting paid for it?
What
you
keeps
it anyway?
You coming back after day after day?
Well, yeah. I think, you know, we shifted towards electric skateboards in the past few years. Mm-hmm. We had worked with a company called Boosted for many years, and we built all their decks and wheels, and they built some amazing electric vehicles, scooters, mm-hmm. and skateboards, and then went off and did our own thing with these guys from Barcelona, Unlimited. To me, being part of that conversation of what the future of mobility is going to look like, mm-hmm. that's what really excites me, and that's what really,
I can tell.
That's what gets me going.
Yeah.
And I think, like we said, there's, you know, it is the Wild West right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it's going to go. I'd like my influence to be one in which there's a lot of personal engagement in that experience, where it's not just, you know, electric motorcycles, which aren't bad.
No, I know what you mean. Or small electric vehicles.
I'd much rather see electric bikes, electric skateboards, things where there's much more user engagement, because I think as we move towards autonomous vehicles in general, mm-hmm. as we move towards sitting behind our desks and playing on our phones all day, mm-hmm. You know, there's opportunities to create these personal experiences, active experiences of space.
I think that's a wonderful, really, really nice thing. I want to tie that up in a bow, is that really what I hear you saying is that, you know, we are moving towards a world of riding. And what you're talking about is your contribution is to get people to help people naturally feel like they can be more engaged, be active, use your body, get out there.
Experience the space as the, what did Tom Matano said? You're either going through the space or you're
experiencing the space. And that's what you're talking about. You know, you just have such a great story, and I just, for people watching and listening, this is the reason for this podcast, stories like yours, that if you have an idea, you're inspired, you have a talent, you know, you made your parents' influence your business. That was your journey. It wasn't like you planned it out, but you just kept going, right? And so that's what I think the beautiful inspiration nugget is, that like, if you have an idea, do it. Mm-hmm. Just keep going. It doesn't matter if you know the end result, because you wouldn't have had this in your mind.
By any means.
Right? That. Yeah, and here it, and yet here it is because of you and those inspirations.
So maybe we can say it's whatever moves you or drives you.
Whatever moves you. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm moved.
And, of course, a good team.
You know, a good, of course. Yes. Yes.
Great people.
Because you can't move. You need a team of wagons. Needs a team to pull it. Yes. How do we find the product again here?
Loadedboards.com.
Loadedboards.com.
Loadedboards.com is our skateboards. And the
and that's, you're talking about the load, the spring load built into it. Right?
Exactly. And maybe other connotations. Yeah.
A different topic for a different and, show. A different audience.
The adult version.
And the...
And what
the
else?
The electric component is unlimitedxloaded.com.
Okay. And are you personally you like to be behind the scenes, or do you have like a
can people reach out to you, or just through the organization?
People are welcome to reach out to me
through the organization. But you have an Instagram or
email or anything?
Email don@loadedboards.com.
Okay, reach out to Don, because I encourage people to, if you're inspired by this kind of thing, to talk to him.
Yeah, join the revolution.
Yeah, this helps you keep inspired. Absolutely. And keep doing it. So thanks for watching, guys. Thank you for being here. It's one of the most inspirational interviews. I'm so glad we got to have our vehicle debut with you. So
now the challenge will be up to a bigger studio to get more cars in here.
Yeah, we're going to do an outdoor show soon.
All right.
Okay.